It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Phil, how are you?
Morena, great. I've just finished, I think, the last and maybe the 40th of the debate. I'm looking forward to seeing more of my wife than John Tamahiri.
fair enough. This is crunch time, of course. Let's start by talking about a big problem at the moment, which is the very low voter turnout. They're saying this is one of the lowest for this time of the year. What's causing that, do you think? And how can we fix this going forward? Because this is a kind of ongoing problem.
Yeah, I wish there was a simple answer to it, and it is a real concern. So what do we have to do? That's the million-dollar question. What I'm hearing from a whole lot of people is that they get their ballot papers, and they look at the ballot paper, and they've got district health board, they've got local board, they've got councillors, and they've got the mayoralty election and sometimes a trust election, and they say, but we don't know most of these people. And they kind of give up at that point. They'll know who the mayoral... Well, they'll know who two of the 21 mayoral candidates are, but it's the profile and the publicity that we have for local government elections, and it's not just at election time. It's got to be a higher profile through that whole period of time. It's got to be an understanding that I think that a way of working within the school system so that people have a clearer understanding of, hey, what is local government about and why is it important? What difference does it make? That's important. And for a lot of young people, including a lot of people, I guess, listening to this program, it'll be, hey, we know what an envelope is, we think, but we don't know what a postbox looks like and where would we find it? So part of the answer might be online voting, but I don't think that's the whole of the answer. I think it's getting up the profile and some of that's, I guess, exactly what we're doing on your program now. It's talking about what the issues are, what local government's about. But it is a worry when you think, generations of people fought for basic rights in a democracy, and the most basic of those rights is the right to cast a vote to determine your future. And if a whole lot of people aren't taking advantage of that, we've got to look at how we might need to make changes to how we operate.
Absolutely. It's interesting as well that you mention the age and youth as well being a big demographic in here. We've seen in the last couple of weeks people exercising their democratic rights quite vocally in climate strikes all around the country, and that's of course been led by young people. Do you think this is maybe an opportunity for us to be having a conversation about lowering the voting age or finding other ways for young people to be involved in the processes, I guess, that make up local body and central government elections?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, the first thing, I just think it's fantastic that so many young people are sufficiently interested in a key issue of the day, which is climate warming, to actually get out there and do something about it and be giving a reminder to my generation, hey, time's running out, you guys have got to act. Does that translate to voting at 16? Look, that might ultimately come. At the moment, the age of majority is 18 for most things, except for, I suppose, your driver's license at 16, etc. But your age of majority legally is 18. Maybe that'll change over time. The problem is this. I mean, I know some 16-year-olds that are better informed and better, more capable of casting an informed vote than some 65-year-olds. I'm not sure that the country's ready for that yet, but as people become better educated, better informed, and as young people show that they're determined to help shape the future, they'll be able to make a case for that.
Absolutely. What would you like to see come out of these climate strikes? Because obviously it's fantastic that people are concerned, but they want, real action, real change. Yeah. What can local council and central government be doing to, I guess, make good on those promises?
Yeah. Well, there's a whole lot we need to be doing, and we need a public mandate to do it. A lot of people, it's an old saying, everybody wants to go to heaven, nobody wants to die. Everybody wants action against climate change, but nobody wants to pay for it. And we will have to pay for it, and we will be paying for it anyway, actually. If we don't respond in a timely way, the cost of dealing with global warming economically and environmentally will be huge, and it may be irreversible. And so the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change say we've got basically 10 years to get our global emissions down to a level that will result in no more than a 1.5% increase in temperatures. And that means that we've got to do it at every level. So look, Auckland by itself, can it change the world? Of course it can't. New Zealand by itself, can it change the world? No. But we've got to play our part. We've got to meet our responsibilities. We've got to take steps that bring emissions down. And what I would like to see out of the student movement and around climate strike are a real indication to local government and to central government, you've got to do this. You've got to get your buses converted from diesel to electric. You've got to make sure that the vehicles that we're importing are more predominantly electric than they are, you know, double cab SUV diesels. At the moment, for every electric vehicle we import 65 SUV diesels. And that's got to change. We don't have that long to do it. Here in Auckland, our focus has got to be on transport emissions because that's up to 46% of our total emissions. And that means, you know, changing the way the city is, making it more compact, making our public transport better because that's far more climate friendly, making sure that our vehicles convert more quickly to electric, and that we put penalties on the high emitting vehicles. All of those things I think are critical, and that's what we'll be tackling in the new term of council.
Well, let's talk a little bit before we let you go about another massive topic that's been knocking around for a long time here, but has kind of resurfaced a bit in the last couple of weeks. Is this sort of the freedom of speech versus white supremacist discourse that's been going on? So, of course, the High Court has denied a review of the decision to bar Southern and Molyneux. Oh, are you still there?
Yep.
No, oh, you just got a bit of robot noise there.
Sorry.
That's all right. The High Court's denied a review of the decision to bar Lauren Southern and Stephen Molyneux from the Auckland Council venue. So you were, of course, involved in this. We've also seen on the Auckland University campus a lot of discussion about the lack of, I guess, response or leadership from high-up management, such as the Vice-Chancellor, on white supremacist posters and stickers being posted around. What do you think we need to be doing, or what do our leaders in these institutions need to be doing to ensure that people feel safe and supported, and that the wrong groups, the people that are sort of spreading hate speech, aren't being bolstered by these kind of misactions?
Yeah, well, look, it's a fine line. First of all, you know, why were Molyneux and Southern banned? They were banned on health and safety grounds by the RFA, which was the proper way to do it. Did I speak out against them and their beliefs? Absolutely. I abhor their beliefs. This guy Molyneux, you know, talking about, you know, if you're black, you've got a lower IQ. Gosh, you've got to go back to the 1950s and Southern States America to get that sort of language. The woman Southern, you know, she went to the United Kingdom, was kicked out of the United Kingdom and barred from coming back because she went deliberately to incite, abuse and demean people of Islamic faith. And I abhor that. So when I said it was a fine line before, it's not a fine line whether you're racist or non-racist. We've got to show zero tolerance for racism, for bigotry and for prejudice. But on the issue of free speech, that's a much tougher one. You want to make sure that people are able to debate freely and people are able to make comments that I might be totally opposed to. But where is the line between free speech and hate speech? My view is that if you set out to deliberately insult and demean somebody on the basis of their ethnicity or their faith, that is hate speech. Look, you can debate almost anything else, but once you start actually making people feel unsafe, insecure, you contribute to the hatred. You know, the guy that did the terrorist killings in Christchurch, where did he get his support from? You know, from 4chan and 8chan and that awful stuff that you see on that. I've heard some of it on my own Facebook site when I spoke out against these guys. There is a line there, and that's what the debate needs properly to be about. When does free speech become hate speech, and when do we say that it's wrong to allow people to incite hatred against somebody else because of their race or their faith? And that's the issue that central government need to tackle in terms of the laws that they make on this in this regard.
Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Phil. We really appreciate it. And we will speak to you soon.
For the privilege of being on the program for the last 3 years, and I hope for the next 3 years. But, hey, my last message to people, please use your vote. It really is important. It's about how we shape the future of our city. It's about, you know, building that infrastructure so we can have better public transport systems, so we can protect our environment, we can get the houses built so that supply meets demand and houses become more affordable. That's what the vote's about this time. Please make sure you use your vote.
Well, thank you so much, Phil. We'll speak to you soon.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.